Hello, welcome back to our video study through the book of Exodus. This week we are looking at Exodus chapter 33. And interestingly, in our last few weeks we've kind of had a roller coaster ride of highs and lows as God's delivered the people of Israel out of slavery in Egypt. He's brought them across the Red Sea. He's provided for them in the wilderness and given them the Ten Commandments. And yet we've seen how Israel still seems to be determined to live their lives however they want to, instead of living their lives the way that God wants them to live. So as we come to Exodus chapter 33, in the beginning of the chapter, we see God telling Moses it's time to leave from Mount Sinai and head towards the promised land, the land that was promised to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Of course, this is the reason why God delivered the Israelites out of slavery in the first place, to bring them to that promised land. And we know from other passages that they spent about a full year at Mount Sinai before they received this command from God that said, it's time to move on. It's time for us to head to the promised land. So in Exodus 33, verse 1, it says, the Lord said to Moses, depart. Go up from here, you and the people whom you have brought up out of the land of Egypt, to the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, to your offspring I will give it. I will send an angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanites, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Go up to a land flowing with milk and honey, but I will not go up among you, lest I consume you on the way, for you are a stiff-necked people. So this is a very interesting series of descriptions that God gives to Moses here. Notice that he says, I'm going to send an angel to go before you and lead you, rather than God himself going before and leading them. Because God says, if I were to come among you, I would consume you because you are a stiff-necked people. That term, stiff-necked, refers to their stubbornness. It carries with it this mental picture of a farmer leading his animals, or a horse rider trying to lead his horse or pull his horse to one direction, but that the animal literally stiffens its neck and refuses to go in the direction that the owner is trying to lead it. And so God says, you know, you are a stiff-necked people. You continue to refuse to go on the path that I have for you, on the path that I am trying to take you, and you're trying to go on your own path. And so God, in all of his holiness, says, I would just end up destroying you, because in his holiness, he cannot be in the presence of sin or sinners. More details on that later on. However, we also see that God says he's bringing them into a land flowing with milk and honey. Well, milk is produced, of course, by cows, mostly where we get milk, what we think of. Cows need to eat grass. And so by saying that this land is filled with milk, God is saying this is a land that it's not short on having lots of grass. It's plentiful in terms of being able to provide food, in order to be able to provide sustenance, not only for the people, but also for their animals. And then he says that this land is also filled with honey, which we know mostly is produced by the bees, but the bees have to get nectar from flowers or other plants. So by God saying that this is a land filled with honey, he's telling them that it's a beautiful land. It's a beautiful country to look at. There's lots of flowers everywhere. So it is a land that he says is both plentiful, there's enough to supply all of your needs, but it's also a beautiful land. It's a good land that I'm taking you to. The opposite of this desert that they've been living in now for about a year. The people then go into mourning at the fact that God says, I can't even come among you because I would consume you because of your wickedness, because of your sin, because of how much you're stiff-necked, you're rebellious, you're stubborn, you don't want to just follow my leading, so I can't even come among you. And we see the people who then are in mourning because of this truth. But then we see something very interesting starting to take place in verse 7. It says, "Now Moses used to take the tent and pitch it outside the camp, far off from the camp, and he called it the tent of meeting. And everyone who sought the Lord would go out to the tent of meeting, which was outside the camp. Whenever Moses went out to the tent, all the people would rise up, and each would stand at his tent door and watch Moses until he had gone into the tent. When Moses entered the tent, the pillar of cloud would descend and stand at the entrance of the tent, and the Lord would speak with Moses. And when all the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the entrance of the tent, all the people would rise up and worship, each at his door. Thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend. When Moses turned again into the camp, his assistant Joshua the son of Nun, a young man, would not depart from the tent." So we see this interesting concept that even though God says, "I will not come amongst you," Moses takes this tent outside of the camp, away from the people, and sets it up. And God comes and meets directly with Moses, one-on-one, personally. So in this case, Moses is sort of the go-between between God and all of the rest of the people. And of course, we kind of see that that's him and Aaron have kind of fulfilled that role throughout this story of Exodus. And here we see Moses taking the initiative that God says, "I cannot come among you, I would consume you." That he says, "Well, I will go out of the camp where all the people are, and I will meet with God there." And all the people recognize this pillar of cloud. Remember, if we remember from earlier in Exodus, the pillar of cloud and pillar of fire to lead them. They recognize this as God's very presence descending to meet with Moses, and they even begin to worship at their own tents every time Moses heads out to this tent of meeting. And it says that if someone needed to ask a question of God, they would come out to this tent of meeting. They would ask Moses. Moses would go in and bring their questions before God. God could give him the answers, and he could bring them back out to the people. So we see Moses entering into prayer with God, specifically in this chapter, in verse 12. Moses said to the Lord, "See, you say to me, bring up this people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me, yet you have said, 'I know you by name,' and you have also found favor in my sight. Now therefore, if I have found favor in your sight, please show me your ways, that I may know you, in order to find favor in your sight. Consider too that this nation is your people." And he said, "My presence will go with you, and I will give you rest." And he said to him, "If your presence will not go with me, do not bring us up from here. For how shall it be known that I have found favor in your sight, I and your people? Is it not in your going with us, so that we are distinct, I and your people, from every other people on the face of the earth?" So this is incredible. As God has told Moses, "I will not come amongst this people. I will not be amongst this people. They are stiff-necked. I would consume them." That Moses now, once again, we see him interceding for his people, praying to God for his people, saying, "God, if you're not going to come and be among us, then we are not going to be successful. We can't do this without you. God, how are we going to do the things that we need to do without you?" And furthermore, he says, "You being amongst us is what makes us a distinct people that others will look to, that we can be a leader amongst the world to bring people into a relationship with you." But notice in the midst of all this questioning, in the midst of this prayer, he asks him, "I want to know more about you." Well, God responds later on. And we see, starting in verse 17, "The Lord said to Moses, 'This very thing that you have spoken, I will do. For you have found favor in my sight, and I know you by name.' Moses said, 'Please show me your glory.' And he said, 'I will make all my goodness pass before you, and will proclaim before you my name, the Lord.'" That's that personal name of God that he revealed to Moses all the way back in chapter 3 again. "And I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and will show mercy on whom I will show mercy. But," he said, "you cannot see my face, for man shall not see me and live." And the Lord said, "Behold, there is a place by me where you shall stand on the rock. And while my glory passes, I will put you in a cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen." So God here tells Moses, I will honor your request, and I will come and be with you. But keep in mind that I can be gracious to the ones I want to be gracious and be merciful to the ones I want to be merciful to. Moses crying out to God, show me your glory. I want to see you. I want to know you. God says, you can't. You would die to see my face, to see my full glory. It would be too much for you because God is holy and human beings are not. But nevertheless, God almost condescends to Moses' level and says, I can show you a little piece of my glory. And that is God's promise to Moses. We see that play out later in chapter 34, verse 29. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of testimony in his hand, as he came down from the mountain, Moses did not know the skin of his face shone because he had been talking with God. Aaron and all of the people of Israel saw Moses, and behold, the skin of his face shone. It goes on to say later in verse 34, whenever Moses went in before the Lord to speak with him, he would remove the veil that he had over his face until he came out. And when he came out and told the people of Israel that he was commanded, the people of Israel would see the face of Moses, that the skin of Moses' face was shining, and Moses would put the veil over his face again until he went to speak with him. So we see that God allowed Moses in those personal encounters with him, when Moses came in to meet with him, to see just a small glimpse of his true glory, and that it was so much that even when Moses left from the presence of God, his own face began to shine for all the people to see that now, not because Moses was any great person that had glory, but because Moses, in getting closer to God, now became a reflection of God's ultimate glory. And I think in this, we can see a parallel for our own lives, that the closer we get to God, the closer a relationship we get with God, the more others will see God's glory reflected in our lives, reflected from us. And the interesting thing is, Moses, God said, You can't see my full glory and live because of sin. But Jesus Christ has opened up a new pathway for us to have direct access to God. That we don't have to have a Moses who goes into a tent of meeting for us and comes out with a shining face. That we individually can go to God in prayer. We can study his word. That we can grow in a relationship with him. And as we see more of his glory, that like the sun light reflects off of the moon so that we can see at night, we can be a reflection of God's ultimate glory as we look to him. That is a tremendous burden and responsibility, but it is an awesome privilege that those of us who know God get to experience. That like Moses, we can leave from our personal time with God and be a shining light and beacon to the rest of the world about God's true glory. I hope and pray that something said today has ministered to your heart, that it is resonating there, and I hope and pray that you will take it and share it with those around you. Thank you, and God bless.